You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, we're not, the perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up. But that was a recent one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe, back actually doing the intro in the green room. We got a four-man show for you today. No Sam Stashkel, which I am super bummed about, but Dave Goss, Bobby Warshaw, and Matt Doyle here. And I hear that the intro duties, the duties in general, have been split somewhat evenly while I'm gone, although wow. Dave did fall on bended knee just now and thank the soccer gods that I'm back. Is that an accurate portrayal of what you just did?
So here's my thing.
You're back in New York, New York.
I'm going to put this in soccer terms for you. It's not that you're great. It's that I can be Lucho Acosta when you're here. So it's not that you're Rooney. It's that there was no Lucho Acosta here. I was playing with Zoltan Stieber and Uli Segura over here.
I thought you were going to say left back Yamil Assad.
Yeah, I set up.
I want to be like in this DC United theorem that you have going here. I think I want to be Paul Areola. Every once in a while I chip in with goals and you're like, oh man, he might be better than anybody thought, but yeah. Generally I'm definitely good enough to be on the field, and I change the game sometimes, but sometimes not.
This is only about the haircut, Andrew.
That's it?
This is only about the
haircut.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was hopeful for more. How'd it go? Did you guys have fun?
Yeah,
we had a lot of fun.
I would say in this whole scenario, if you're not Rooney, then we don't make the playoffs. So this is a below the red line.
So you need me to be Rooney. I'm not going to be Rooney today. I went on a complete MLS and soccer detox. And I feel like a new person. I feel like I'm entering this with, like, you know, the skin of a baby and, like, the memory of...
Where were you?
I was in California.
Where in California?
Northern California.
Do you miss it? The part that's not on fire. I miss Northern California. It's gorgeous there.
Yeah, it is.
And it's not 112 degrees like it has been in New York the last 4 days.
People are fighting for every square inch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you clearly didn't go to San Francisco
fighting for every square inch. Week 27 in the books here. As I said, I didn't watch much, if any, so I'm going to have you guys educate me here.
Oh, yeah.
Help me out.
Yeah, a few big stories. Tyler Adams signed with Red Bull Leipzig, but he's back here on loan. Wayne Rooney's been traded to San Jose Earthquakes.
Wait.
Wayne Rooney's been traded to San Jose Earthquakes, and Minnesota United signed 5 defensive midfielders.
Not wingers.
No. 5 DMs that were all free agents.
You.
I think it was N'Golo Kante, Casemiro. Who else was it, Doyle?
I thought it was Fred
Busquets.
Bob.
Busquets. Yeah, if you Busquets. Like Busquets.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm buying everything you're selling right now.
Yeah, so that's what happened in MLS, Weeby.
Okay. By the way,
which
U.S.
Are,
national
which
team
are you most
roster
excited
come
about?
Up. I'm really in for
the
Wayne Rooney
to
San Jose.
With Wando?
I'm a little frustrated, though, because obviously I need Wando to break the record this year. I think I made that prediction. I think I fell on the sword for like the third straight year, so I really need that. We'll talk about those things that you made up. Also, U.S. national team, the roster is in. The coach remains Dave Sarakin, and apparently Ernie Stewart hasn't even talked to a candidate. So, yeah, we'll cover that. Juan Carlos Osorio is not an option anymore. He's with Paraguay. He's coaching some of the best players Major League Soccer has to offer, and that's how you get Matt Doyle riled up.
And dodged a bullet, man.
It's actually the second show in a row where
Doyle dodged a missile.
I got it out of my system early this time. Good luck to Paraguay. I hope you all enjoy seeing Christian Paredes as a number 10. Yeah. Miguel Almiron as a left back.
And Kaku gets 14 minutes off the bench in game 4 of the World Cup.
There you go.
We have a good mailbag, yeah? You put that together for us?
Yeah. Okay. A great one. We've gotten some great stuff over the last few weeks.
I
feel like our fans are rounding into playoff form.
Gotcha.
Like they're ready for the stretch run.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Let's get it started. By the way, Thursday we're going to rank the MLS Cup contenders, so I'll be caught up by then and able to contribute in a real way to that conversation. Again, Bobby, it's a podcast, so when you roll your eyes and nod at me, you can't. You have to say it.
I want people to know the reason that I attempted to trick you was you didn't know Laurent Simon had left Major League Soccer.
I didn't know.
So it felt like I could actually get something
really,
by
really unplugged.
It was beautiful. I deleted every app off my phone.
Uh-huh.
that was related to Major League Soccer. I sabotaged my email address so I could not check my email, and I just basked in silence. Nothing. The only thing that was continuing was the group chat that all of us are on and many others within this crazy soccer world, and that just confused me,
yeah,
so I
right.
needed it.
Mm-hmm. It's just Bobby sending messages right. of, like, why don't they play this
I
coach
didn't
at
realize,
left back?
I didn't realize David was in the group chat.
Yeah, that's
I don't really
point.
Discuss much.
That's a good point. I'm going to start putting tweets out that are just like, Warshaw and Doyle non sequiturs within the group text that, like, it comes
wow,
through.
That's,
and
no, that's violating a confidence right there.
Okay. All right. I'll read parts of them
then
on the
Doyle
show.
Would violate himself.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tell me what I missed. Week 27.
What?
Post-soccer detox. What I missed. What do you got?
I think the big thing from this past weekend was what DC United did on Sunday night. And it was big in part because of what happened on Wednesday. They looked listless and dead at home against Philadelphia. That was coming off of a loss to the Red Bulls, and it looked I thought it was going to be a 3-game losing streak for DC, and it was going to give Montreal total control of the race for the 6th spot in the Eastern Conference. But DC, they were so good. They were so smart. Bill Hamid was massive in the second half, but I thought that, honestly, I thought DC were pretty much the better team throughout this game. And if you look at the expected goals battle, like, yeah, Atlanta definitely had their chances, but a lot of them came after DC was already in control of the game state. And DC's proved over 2 years that they can counter against this Atlanta team. It was huge, and I think as of right now, DC are probably the favorites to get sixth place because 7 of their final 9 games are at home.
DC look great. It's a good shout. I'll give some love to RSL.
Yeah.
How are you not going to mention RSL smashing the Galaxy 6-2?
Well, it's one. You have one thing that you can teach me, Bobby, so you only got the one.
Okay.
RSL 6-2. I saw that. I saw the duck.
You saw the duck.
I saw the duck.
It's great content.
That made its way into my timeline somehow.
Demir Krylov started at center forward. Yeah. Got a hat trick. Great runs in the box. He's not. It's funny. I think. Did you call him a false nine, Doyle?
Yeah.
I actually don't think he's. I think he's like almost like a true number nine who hangs around the box, but he does connect with the wingers and the attacking mid coming behind him.
So
pretty
he
well.
Did, like. You might be right about it in the box that he's more of a true nine. Because I mean, certainly a couple of the goals he scored were true nine's goals. But if you look at how he, like, especially on the Rusnak goal, how he positions himself in the build-up, he's much more likely to drift out wide, just as Corey Baird does and just as Luis Silva does, and get between the center back and the fullback rather than hit that A-gap between the two center backs.
But that's also a center striker. We're getting into semantics here, but yeah. I think he's more of a center striker than people give him credit for, so that's what I'll... 6-2 RSL, a huge six-point win over the Galaxy.
They made history. First team to score yeah. 6 goals in back-to-back games. Mine, because this is
Hold
for
on.
You.
Hold on, before you get there,
what?
I feel like this was just Bobby slow playing the is Sonny the most important player in the Western Conference. Like, he didn't say it, but he implied he went through
he
that.
He was fantastic. And I think if you're going to look at Severino, Rusnak, Krylov, Plata all playing really well, it helps a ton that they've got a sturdy defensive midfielder to give them the confidence and the bravery to try what they want, knowing that he can clean up their messes.
Can I ask one question? RSL last year, like this time, we were all in love. Just, you know.
Best team in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, we had the claret and cobalt glasses on, and we were like, if they don't make the playoffs, there's no justice in the world. Now they went through a long stretch this year of us pretty much saying, like, I don't even really want to watch them. Like, they have players we love, but it's not a team that you want to watch, and the results aren't there. Now they're fourth in the Western Conference. They're winning games. They're blowing teams out, and they're finally winning a little bit at home. Is this team, how good are they? Are they good? I'm still trying to figure it out, and I didn't see this 6-2 whooping, and it's the Galaxy. So when I see 6 goals, I'm like, yeah, okay, it's the Galaxy. I didn't see exactly how that happened.
Do you want me to play my role in the group right now and be like, yeah, I know that they just smashed 2 teams, and I'm not sure they're good yet? I mean,
no,
they're because
I was about to say the
okay,
same thing.
Okay, please. Yeah, I would love for someone to take that burden off my chest. Every
yeah, I would say the same thing because, one, like you said, this is what happens. The Galaxy, when they get pulled apart, they get ripped apart. And then the other part about it is it didn't really prove their deficiencies wrong because they gave up a goal 30 seconds into the first half. They almost gave up a goal a minute into the second half. There are still issues on that back line where they lose players in obvious places, and there's still moments where they don't cover the full area in midfield and they leave huge gaps to attack that back line. So those things still exist. They just outscored the LA Galaxy. So I want to see the next two or three games how legitimate they are.
I think it's a good point. I mean, if you look at their last nine games, it's the loss at Minnesota, draw at home versus Colorado, draw at home – or excuse me,
and
draw
that's what
at San
that's what
Jose.
We were all saying, like, meh, meh, like this team's going downhill under Pecky.
Win at home versus Chicago, draw on the road versus Montreal, which is actually a good result, loss – at LAFC, and then the last three, win at Houston, win at Colorado, win versus LA. You can only play the teams in front of you. You can't just magically create a tougher schedule that you're playing. So this is obviously not that for RSL, but they've gotten it done, and they put themselves in a position now. You know, they have Minnesota at home, then they go at Atlanta, at Sporting Kansas City, mm-hmm. versus Portland, then versus New England, then at Portland. So they only... Of their last five, they only have one where you look at.
And I just want to say, for them, this matters because they're a confidence team.
Yeah.
And these young guys, or not young, because Joel Platz is like not really that young anymore. We should stop saying that.
26.
They were invisible at times in the beginning of the year because they just weren't going at guys. They just weren't playing the way that you'd expect them to play. And so I think it matters that this is happening against whether it's bad teams or good teams, because they will then play better against good
teams. And it's an argument for the idea of squad pressure, the idea of if you don't go out there and if you go out there and you don't produce, you're going to lose your job. And like this turnaround started to happen at least a little bit when Danilo Acosta played himself into the lineup, and then Aaron Herrera played himself ahead of Danilo Acosta. When Nick Beisler played himself into a more prominent role, beating guys out. When Sonny played himself into a more prominent role. And especially when Bofo Saucedo beat out Joao Plata for about a month. Joao Plata has come back from that with fire in his... I mean, he has 8 goals, 7 assists in 1,300 minutes. He's looking like a best 11 caliber player, which he can be when he has the pressure to be that. So it's a good argument for that. Whether it holds... I mean, they should beat Minnesota at home. Again, at... They go at Atlanta, at at Sporting Kansas City. The road gets tougher. Whether it holds up there is an open question for me.
And the Galaxy has a much easier last four games of the year. The Galaxy ends with three or four really winnable games. So RSL needed these points given the differences in their schedule at the very end.
LA haven't won in six. They just got smoked.
Yeah, I'm not sure those games are that winnable. Like,
they're
this
below
is a
the
team,
playoff line. Like, I'm sitting here trying to catch up today, and I'm like, LA are not going to make the playoffs now?
No, yeah.
They're not.
You think so?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised by that. I'm not like the little like peak in my voice was not about surprise. It was just kind of like, oh, that's where this season is going. After you made all these signings, you have all these stars, but your back line is just such utter trash that you cannot beat in games unless you score four goals.
No, but it's absolutely true, and you're at a time of the season when, like, other teams know who they are. They know their identity, so it's not like, oh, you know, teams are struggling offensively. Flow is an issue. You know, you come into a game against the Galaxy, and you're thinking, like, this is a must 3 points, and I also need to add to my goal differential. That's the point you're at right now, I think, when you go and play this Galaxy team. So I don't see a scenario also on games played and points per game and all that where they get into the playoffs.
What about the team that went like 7-1-3 over the course of 2.5 months from May until July? Like that was the Galaxy had one loss in 2.5 months and they just disappear?
Clearly.
I mean, look, I'm looking at a lot of these wins and they weren't great wins. It's Montreal, it's San Jose, it's Real Salt Lake when Real Salt Lake weren't playing well at all. It's Columbus, which was pretty good but at home, and it's New England, it's Philly. And they're still giving up goals in all those games.
Bro, you better respect the union. You don't bring anti-union chat into
the room.
Can
I look forward
anymore.
On the Galaxy?
Stop, because Bobby's going to yell about the train, and then I got to bring down
the
levels.
Yeah, Fafa Pico, hey, Fafa Pico put the words in all of our mouth. They don't suck.
No, I put those words in your mouth.
Wait,
Andrew.
You did? But Fafa Pico said it.
Like 18 weeks ago.
Did he get a slate on at Philly Union, or was that you? I can't.
Can we talk about moving forward for the Galaxy?
Sure.
I think these last 8 or 9 games, they just need to put their best players on the field. Go 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 and just get Alessandrini in the starting lineup. Get Jonathan Dos Santos in the starting lineup. Maybe even get Gio in the starting lineup. I appreciate what you did with the 3-5-2.
They have four defenders among their 11 best players.
That's generous.
Yeah, it's gonna be hard.
But what else
are
you
gonna
do? I understand, but just get your best players in the field. Play, take the risk with the four in the back, and try and score goals and win games.
So here's the thing, right? The idea with Dos Santos has always been, you can't really play him on the wing. because he doesn't defend, and that makes your entire defense bad. That's why he never really stuck in any one team for all that long and never became the player that his talent suggests he should be. The Galaxy defense literally cannot get any worse. So you might as well just throw him out there on the wing if it gives you a better chance of scoring four or five goals. Play a front three of Gio on the right, inverted on the right, Zlatan up top, and Alessandrini on the left. Then play Jonah and Perry Kitchen and Sebastian Legette in central midfield.
So no Ola Kamara in the starting lineup?
Ola hasn't been good.
No, I agree with that. I'm surprised to hear you say that. Would you hate to see Sebastian Legette go to right back in the same way Paul Areola did it, and you just go Ashley Cole on one side?
He's probably Legette better at it than Rolf Felcher.
Oh, yeah, we can agree on that. But if you're just going to go for it, and you're going to get your best 11 players in the field.
Be wary if you are coached by Bobby Warshaw, because you are going to the outside back. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. He is moving you to outside back.
For sure.
All right, I've been
can
on the
I
edge
move
of my seat here.
Things that matter now?
You were right there.
Got to make my hipster pick. Okay? Mesopotamia's favorite lion roars again. Justin Miram's back.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like himself. He ripped NYCFC up. He scored a goal. He had an assist. Columbus Crew SC get a big win because Philly was like rising on them. They also hadn't played for a little while, so it was good to see them look sharp once again. And this is a team that no one wants to play in the playoffs. Fact. Like Greg Berhalter, Domi Turan said he's the best coach in the conference.
He loves him.
They've made playoff runs in different ways in the past. He's played his style of soccer. He's also played more defensive and closed down. So Crew SC are alive, baby. And Justin Miram is back.
Can I just read the quote here? Because I did go watch these highlights. This is Domi Turan on Triple G, 3G. They have a clever coach. I love this coach. I think he's one of the best coaches in our conference. That's my opinion. They play really well, and I think they're a candidate to win MLS.
So they are. If Miram plays like the Miram that we saw.
I watched the highlights.
Yeah.
When you watch those highlights, it feels like a throwback to last year where he gets isolated on that left wing and he runs at you unrepentantly. And then just at the moment you think you've got his right foot taken away, he cuts inside and he tests the goalkeeper or he forces you to dive in or he cuts it back on you again with the other one and plays it across the box. I mean, it looked like a Justin Miram who was like, you know what? What do I got to lose?
Yeah. Or
Orlando
Pedro
sucked,
Santos.
But now I'm rolling.
Pedro Santos gets on the ball, and Miram becomes that like second forward where he comes in at the far post.
Yeah.
And that changes this team when he's not on the ball again, which they didn't have from anyone else. And he talked for a while to Sam Seyskull, and I was here for that, and you've talked to him a bit. And, like, he's been very open about the issues he had in Orlando, both like with the team and mentally, and it's been impressive to watch him deal with it, and he might – for that, be a stronger player in the end coming up on this season.
And anybody who wants to point at Justin Miram and say, oh, he took the easy way out, oh, blah, 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 excuses, he reversed his decision and went back to Columbus. Look, I get it. You can say those things. But you better believe that half that Orlando roster, if not more, were like, damn, Justin Miram just got out of here. Like, I wanted to be that guy. Like, it is not good here.
No,
it's not. It's not good. And he is one of the best players in the league. And I love what you said about Pedro Santos because we bagged on him for so long. But Pedro Santos can't be the number one option outside of Pipa. Can't be the number one. Because, look, Jussie Zardes is the point of the spear.
I think that the big issue right now is Pedro Santos can't even be the number three option. Like that's why they needed Miram.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
you had Jossie and you had Pipa, who was not the same Pipa that he was in the first half of the year, which is why like
rinse, wash, repeat with Pipa. Man.
Yeah,
like 6 months. It's 6 months
of brilliance,
of just dominance. Yeah. And you're like, go, where'd he go?
And so this is like to me, this is the difference between Atlanta, maybe the Red Bulls. Maybe Seattle, if we're willing to put them in that group. Maybe Sporting Kansas City and Columbus, who I think are like a half step down. But that's the beauty of the playoffs. It might not if Jossie gets hot, if Pipa gets hot, if Miram gets hot, they could beat anybody. That's what's wonderful about the short season.
If Zach Steffen gets hot as well. Let's not forget about that either. All right. So you guys are educating me on the weekend, and I'm just trying to determine here. Intentional troll move or unintentional troll move that not one of you said Seattle getting their eighth straight win against Sporting Kansas City, by the way, who just re-signed their whole damn team today.
Bobby.
Nobody wanted to mention Seattle. Nobody wanted to, you know, I had to go to MLSsoccer.com, check the headlines.
In fairness,
just to get that piece of news.
In fairness, I did create a rundown for you in which I had Seattle at the top.
Well, you're not supposed to tell people how the sausage is made.
Yeah, for sure.
I ignored that rundown, and I came up with a new rundown, which was basically, tell me one thing I need to know about MLS this weekend. And nobody said,
well, here's the
Seattle.
Thing. When you left, they'd won 7 in a row. So when you left, they were still – it was the same thing. This is a great team on a great run, and we're not sure exactly how good they are, but
– but we're calling them a great team. Are we all – is this a four-man
decision? I'm pretty sure that's not unanimous.
Again, Bobby does not understand the podcast format, but
– yeah, I'm still not totally convinced.
But you're more convinced than you were.
No, yeah, for sure. It's definitely a better team than it was a month ago. I got a lot of flack because 6 weeks ago I said I don't understand their identity. They definitely have more of an identity now. Mm-hmm. I think if you were to ask Brian Schmetzer or people on that team what their identity is, they could answer that question, whereas a month ago they couldn't, even though they were winning.
I'm asking Bobby Warshaw what he thinks that identity is, because you just said you feel they've improved.
Yeah.
What has improved? What is Seattle good at?
I'll piece together things that other people have said. Mm-hmm. And what Matt Penn said, which we covered last week, is that they are very good staying compact defensively and forcing the opponent into inopportune areas so that they have low percentage shots on, or, you know, low percentage opportunity on goals. Offensively, I'll say what Doyle said. I think they are an above average passing team, that they have a lot of guys who are composed on the ball. They still don't transition that well. They still don't actually possess and move opponents that well, but they have enough good passers that they break lines and make good passes, actually somewhat similar to what Toronto did last year. Mm-hmm. Toronto wouldn't really move you side to side. They just had a bunch of guys that with their hips, with their eyes, with their body movement could break lines with passes and put teammates in good spots.
And having Ozzie Alonso playing this.
Right.
Go ahead.
That's the last part of it. Ultimately, Ozzie Alonso is maybe the best player of the last decade, last generation, over longevity, and to have him at his best. I mean, you try to talk about, like, break down what he did on that first goal, which I think might be the best team goal anybody scored all year. And I'm like, you can't break that down. I mean, Ozzie Alonso saw Roger Espinoza, probably the most intense and fiercest tackler maybe this league has ever seen, like, after Dima Kovalenko, right? Am I making that up?
I mean, he's
early
up there.
Years.
He's
early up years, there. I would have given you that for sure. I think he's
slowed down a little
the
bit.
Middle ground.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, he has it in him.
But either way, Ozzie Alonso was 1v1. He didn't have anybody behind him. He didn't have anyone with 20 yards either side of him. If Roger Espinoza wins this ball, he's on a breakaway, and Ozzie Alonso stares him down and just takes a touch to the side and dribbles by. Like, you can't, there's no words you can use to teach that.
It was
that.
A spectacular play. Yeah. It was a breathtaking play. And then he pings that pass. That split, like, Graham Zusi made the wrong read, right? He came up, because that's the Sporting Kansas City press. When Espinoza goes mm-hmm. up to press, Zusi fills in behind centrally. By filling in centrally, he allowed Alonso the lane to hit that third line pass that split, I think it was Rubio and Zusi, mm-hmm. and released Brad Smith down
which
the
I can't
flank.
Blame Zusi for.
I can blame him a little bit.
Oh, sure you can in this case, but, like, the flip side of that is there's only one Ozzie Alonso. The vast majority, and he has to recognize that, a given. But the vast majority of defensive midfielders in this league don't make that play.
What should have happened.
Don't even come close to making that play.
I find this to be an incredibly fascinating play. What should have happened is Graham Zusi keeps his zone. He has to tell Gerso Fernandez to slide left. As soon as the attacking players rotate, you then switch your responsibility. So instead of Zusi following the player in and Gerso tracks the outside back running forward, Zusi has to tell him, hey, Gerso, go left. You take the player checking, and it's now my responsibility to take Brad Smith's run. So SKC definitely bots that, and they're definitely mad at themselves in film.
Brad Smith, we didn't really, like, blow up on this show when he signed.
We were wrong, too.
Yeah, was that seems like a mistake. It also seems like the Sounders have two of the most, like, highly rated but still vastly underrated players in the history of Major League Soccer, and Chad Marshall and Ozzie Alonso. Guys that we all love and think are really good, but when you say something like he might be the best player in the last 10 years, it makes me feel like we didn't truly value them, especially with the case that over the last few years it's been like a revolving door of Ozzie's done, move him on, Ozzie's done, move him on, he isn't worth the DP tag.
Well, it's...
There's other baggage that comes with Ozzie, too.
It's... Well, I don't want to get into that, but it's an open question as to is he worth the DP tag if you're only going to get 12 games a year of this type of play out of
him. If you win 11 of them.
Well, if you win 11 of them and, like, they come in the playoffs, then yeah, obviously. But, like, nobody – first of all, nobody wins the battle against Father Time, which we're seeing with David Villa. And second of all, there's no guarantee that the 11 or 12 games that he's healthy are going to come during the most crucial part of the season.
Can we get into the crux here, though? Can we? You asked the question, and I'm willing to say it. I still thought SKC was a better team. I still think if you go home and away, Seattle Sounders versus SKC, I thought SKC created better chances overall. They dominated the ball more, and I still thought walking out of that game that SKC – and I take no joy in this, right? It doesn't help my career to say that a team on an 8-game winning streak, I don't think it's particularly good. I wish I could identify and say that I think that they were the better team, but I just can't. I still think SKC was a better team.
So, yeah, there's a lot to take out of this one, but one of the things – that I agree with Bobby on is when I left watching that game, I felt as strongly about SKC winning the Western Conference in the playoffs as I did going into that game. Like, I don't think that they performed poorly. I don't think they choked. I don't think they looked outplayed in any way. And when you look at what SKC does well, they created opportunities playing the way they wanted to, and they got pulled apart on the one goal. Otherwise, it was a deflected cross that went in and a penalty kick from a not really dangerous area. So those two chances they gave up aren't high percentage chances that you're going to be worried about the structure of your team. The one thing for Seattle that I'll say, which we didn't mention, is like, yeah, 6 weeks.
I don't know
weeks.
If I agree with that.
Okay.
Because all three goals came down that Sporting Kansas City right side.
Okay, but if Pike's arm's not there.
But they're getting into dangerous spots regardless. Harry Shipp in that spot is dangerous. Brad Smith in that spot, you know he's dangerous because that's where the first goal came from.
I would also say that how many teams in the West have a left back that's going to get forward
that's,
as many times?
That's fair.
And is Brad Smith going to do that at Sporting
Park? How many teams have the central midfield and center backs because you know Kim Keehee can pass the hell out of the ball? How many of them have the ability to release Brad Smith down that left side? But regardless of irrespective of what Seattle did to that right side, people are still picking on that right side. People have realized that Zusi pushes way up, and that leaves them exposed. And that's where a lot of the trouble with Sporting Kansas City defensively has come from this year.
Diego Rubio scores in this game, which is just what he does at this point. I'm thinking back to the transfer window, and we were bagging KC, bagging RSL. Why didn't you get a center forward? It turns out maybe neither of them needed it.
Chilean international.
I know. That tells you something. Working his way back into the selection. SKC put out a bunch of content today because they basically re-signed their whole team. Beisler first, Espinoza next, Ilya next, Graham Zusi right after that. Extensions for all four of those guys. The quote-unquote core, as the club puts it. I want to throw some ages on this. You talk about Father Time. Beisler, 31. Espinoza, 31. Zusi, 32. Ilya, 27. So he's a true in-your-prime guy. And I think one of the kind of underrated factions of this team has been his just very, very consistent play for the last couple of years. Was this a good plan on Kansas City's part to re-sign all these guys basically before they could hit free agency? Now, we don't know the details here, and Kansas City has been very good in the recent past about being pretty transparent about what players were signed for, how long, TAM, no TAM. We didn't really get any of that in the press release, and I wonder if the bird dog will be on that in the coming days.
The players' union usually releases the salary rundown, the salary list, middle of September every year. So we'll have a better sense of how good.
But that'll
I think
be
it's
this
for
year.
Next year. They would re-sign for next year. Same with Jonathan Osorio. We won't
That's
know.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to matter what designation they come under. I would be shocked to see guys that were over the quote-unquote TAM valuation or DP valuation come underneath it, especially given where this team is and the roles that Roger and Matt and Graham and all these guys have played. But I do wonder, given you know how long these deals might be, whether or not this is the right move, and regardless what it says about Kansas City right now that they would make these moves. Is it we believe we have a team for this season and perhaps you know next maybe three to go challenge for and win MLS Cup in all those years? Is that what this messaging is? What are they saying?
So I think there's a line that I heard from a friend who works in the league talking about trying to build up their academy and their USL team and their pipeline, and they've had strategy meetings and they've had tactical meetings and they've had all of that, and what they took from all of it is that all of that loses to culture. Culture is the most important thing if you're building a club, if you're building an organization that you want to win with, that you want to see produce good players, that you want to have accountability. And what this says to me, even if they end up overpaying for these guys, and there's not a single one of them at this point who I think is a TAM caliber player in the league anymore.
Ilya might be terrible.
Maybe, but I don't think he's even a top eight defensive midfielder. The culture matters, and if they got these guys back for decent money, I think it's worth every penny of it, because these guys are keepers of the culture in Kansas City, and that is so important.
And I would take it even one step further with the potential future they might be looking at, and this is pure speculation. We're going to talk about it in the second segment. But if Peter Vermees is leaving, those guys become even more important.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Is this a domino on Vermees going to the national team because they lost the head of the culture that they want to put the four lieutenants and make sure that they stay?
Exactly. By the way, Seth Sinovic left out. That bums me out. he's been huge for that.
Sure. Yeah, he has. But it's that's kind of the story of his career in a lot of ways.
Right?
It really is. Every
they'll announce it on the Friday before Christmas.
From the Revs, and then he went and trialed at RSL, and he landed in Kansas City but didn't really want to be there, and then he was going to retire instead of going Montreal, and they keep signing left backs, and he keeps winning the job. Look, they lose this game, but I think I'm with you guys. I think you look at the top of the Western Conference, they're undoubtedly among the top three, and you could really argue that they could push on. Montreal.
No, I thought you were going to say LAFC.
Well, I can say LAFC.
Poor
Bradley
transition.
Bowl.
No, that's a mediocre transition. Weeby usually does better.
I just did it for him.
From top
I came back and everybody wants to help me, and I really appreciate that because I need it today.
You had it right there. Top of the West, yep. LAFC.
Top of the West, okay. On the flip side, top of the East, New York Red Bulls. They did it with see, I'm just moving things around on you. I like to keep you guessing, Bobby. That way you can't sit on your computer and just pretend like nothing's happening and then look at me like dumbfounded when I ask you a question.
You're basically playing Bobby at left back right now,
right,
is what you're saying.
Montreal. Look, they hadn't been playing well. Red Bulls come to town. Red Bulls get worked.
Mm-hmm.
Red Bulls qualify for the playoffs. The first team to do so.
Can I give I'll give my takeaway on Montreal this year. Can I? Do you guys have anything strong to say before I? So I think that Montreal shows. I would say that Montreal has the best defensive non-pressing shape in the league. And if you look at the numbers, Montreal wins more balls in their own defensive third than anyone else. And to me, they've just worked on their block of eight, their shape, their distances, their angles, and made it hard to score on them. But they don't quite have good enough players like Seattle do to make it really hard on them. But they have gotten the most out of the group that they have via defensive tactics.
Yeah.
Is that a fair statement?
No. Yeah.
Why?
And then my kicker to this is all that if you do that, so the other eight teams like Colorado, San Jose, they could have all done what Montreal did and just said, we are going to get good at this thing and then kind of add the others as we go.
They haven't added the others, though.
But they have Piatti. When you have Piatti, you don't really have to add the others that much.
They have Quincy Ameriquois.
And Quincy Ameriquois was a brilliant choice to start at center striker this weekend.
Yeah,
using
I agree
his
with
pace,
that.
His energy. So I just think to myself, around Major League Soccer, if you don't feel like you're one of the top 10 teams, you can do what Montreal, and a little bit like what Vancouver have done. Although I don't think Vancouver have done it nearly as well as Montreal. Like, I think if Remy Garde was coaching Vancouver, there actually might be a top 3 or 4 team in the West. And I know you guys aren't that high on Remy Garde, but I've been impressed with what he's done with this Montreal team and their tactical plan.
I mean, I've been impressed that they've been able to pull out of what was an absolute swan dive into the basement because they lost 8 out of 9 games.
Mm-hmm.
The only one in that time was a win at home against New England. To come out of that and to come out of him basically roasting his players publicly, calling out everybody on his roster, and integrating a bunch of new faces, whether it's Rod Fanny or Camacho or Tadair, whoever you want to throw in that little mix.
Like Bakary Sagna?
Yeah. Hey, he got a goal.
Yeah.
He got a goal at the back post.
The Red Bulls are terrible defending set pieces right now. Yeah. They got roasted a couple of weeks back at Vancouver. They've gone full zonal, which is weird. you don't see full zonal. You see a mix, right? Even if you're not out there putting your best aerial defender against their best aerial threat, you put somebody on his hip so that he can't jump. So that he gets knocked a little bit as he jumps. And then you say, all right, you know what? We want Aaron Long or Tim Parker. Not that he played, actually. But we want our big guys in the mix getting free runs themselves. Put Connor Lade on Rod Fanny and make sure that Fanny doesn't get a free run. The fact that they're not doing that was kind of weird to me.
Shocking that Fidel Escobar would struggle on set pieces after watching his performance for Panama at the World Cup.
This was a really good win for Montreal, and it was a necessary win. It stopped the bleeding because they had one win in their past six. But look at their schedule the rest of the way. At Philly, versus NYCFC, at DC, versus Columbus, versus Toronto, at New England. That's tough.
And they hit their three games up. They have three more games played than DC, and DC is 6 points back.
Yeah.
And basically all home games.
Yep. Seven of nine
what,
left.
What you should take from Matt reading the form guide repeatedly is that We're at the point where it truly matters. Like, your remaining schedule, like, there's no more like, oh, it's midseason MLS, you can take an L, you know, draw it home, it's going to be okay. Like, we are getting to the point where it won't be okay. Whether you miss the playoffs, whether you don't get a home game in the playoffs, whatever that might be, your team, all these teams, their season is being evaluated in real time right now.
Also, all of them, if you look at the schedule, everyone plays each other once.
Yeah.
So everyone controls their own destiny at this point. So for Montreal, it's like, yeah, you could talk about the pieces, right? Everyone has games in hand on them. They shouldn't be in the playoffs. But if they go out and beat DC head-to-head and beat Toronto.
If they get crushed in those four other games, it doesn't matter as long as they beat DC.
Exactly, yeah. I would like to say, I'm not going to like stand on it for a while. I don't know that they're going to make the playoffs. I did pick them to make the playoffs preseason in this room, and everyone laughed at me. I think Doyle got mad at me. So I just want that to be out there now.
Long memory here. Long memory. I mentioned the Bradley Bowl. I tried to transition to it. I couldn't. You're talking about every game mattering. Well, Michael Bradley is basically saying that repeatedly. He's saying, look, it's not even close. It's not been close. We haven't been good enough through 27 games. Yeah. The one I liked was, quote, we've got 2 weeks now to see if we can regroup for the 100th time this year. I mean, I sit in this couch in the green room all the time and talk myself into thinking Toronto FC are going to make the playoffs. I mean, I've done it like five times this year in the middle of a terrible slide. And they win one game or they win two games and Josie comes back and he looks great. And I'm like, you know what? This team, there's no way. This team is a playoff team. They've got all the pieces. Mentally, they should have it. And they, as Bradley said after these quotes, after a 4-2 loss to LAFC at Toronto FC, we don't have it. We haven't had it all year. Something's missing. I don't. Is it a mentality thing? I don't know what's missing. He seems to imply that from the top down, it's not been there this year.
We talked about some mentality from the start, right? It took a huge toll the last 2 years. MLS Cup losing, MLS Cup winning, CCL. And guys, I said this from the start. Like, being a professional athlete, the same as being a person. Sometimes, like, your emotional tank gets empty, and we found game after game, their emotional tank has just been empty. When this team used to step up to the occasion last year, they haven't done it this year.
But do you think it would have been different? Do you think it would have been different if they had beaten Chivas?
It's a great question. No.
I think the injuries, no matter what. Yeah. Like, if they had been healthy and they didn't have it emotionally and mentally, they'd be in the playoffs.
But there have still been games when they have had undoubtedly the better roster. And I actually think back to when they were up 2-0 on Chicago with 5 or 10 minutes left, and they were leading Columbus. These games, these times when they could just lock it down last year, they could have just flipped the switch and been like, all right, enough is enough. And they haven't been able to do it this year.
They also had better players on the back line last year. They had Betashore, who I think is was last year a more consistent defender. And without Mavinga right now, they're playing a four-man back line.
They're 3-1-1 when Mavinga starts and goes 90, more than 45.
And it's not just him. It puts Drew Moore in his correct position now at this age where he should play. He's not really great one-on-one, and he's supposed to move pieces around. It puts Zavaleta and Hagelin, when Hagelin's healthy, into a better position where
the
they
regression
should be.
Of Zavaleta and Hagelin this year has to be – I mean – obviously, the whole year is taken together is the most disappointing thing. But the regression of those two guys who were so good in 2017, there's a lot of stuff that Toronto, even if they make the playoffs, there's a lot of stuff that Toronto FC is going to have to take some time to figure out this off season, and that's the big one to me. Why did these guys? They were so good last year, and they're so flammable. They're so freaking flammable this year. They got to figure out why that happened.
Can I just say I really enjoyed what Carlos Vela said after scoring his, 0% chance angle goal right over the top of Clint Irwin? Basically, I was tired, so I just shot. and then to do that, are you kidding me?
He's
Come
good.
On, Carlos Vela.
He's very good.
It's beautiful.
He's arguably the best player in the league.
It's beautiful. He's not been truly consistent this year. Can I just say that?
Mm-hmm.
He's had times where it's like, damn, this dude is the best player in the league. And then he's had month stretches where you're like, where'd Carlos Vela
go? At some point, you got to unpack the fact that he's a much better player when he's playing with Urania.
I was just about to say that.
He is when he plays with Diamande or Ramirez.
Because don't say he's the best player in the league, David, when for 8 weeks since the World Cup, he was very average. And we knew he had the talent, but this is the first time he's really stepped up since the World Cup. And it's also the first time, I believe, he started with Urania, in MLS play at least, not in Open Cup.
But I would say everyone else that you talk about being the best player didn't have a World Cup, so no one else had to deal with that. Right? Just from the mental point of view of like finally being back with the national team, going to the World Cup, having this huge high at the beginning, having this huge. Also, the only time that matters is the next 2.5 to 3 months. If he's the best player in the league for 10 of the next 12 weeks, then December 9th, he's the best player in Major League Soccer.
All right. That's what it's all about at this point. Pushing through the last three or so months of the season all the way into December in MLS Cup. You can go check the standings. You can go check the schedule. Everything's right there. We're going to do our thing on Thursday, and we're just going to spend a segment ranking the top 10 MLS Cup contenders. Who would you put your money on? Who would you guarantee this thing on? Matt won't be there, but he's going to give us his list. If you want to send us your list, 401-206-0MLS, right off the top of the head. Not even missing a beat. Extratime at MLSsoccer.com. We're going to break. On the other side, U.S. National Team and Canada.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions. I need to make you mine. Danny, don't change your number. 867-5309.
867-5309. Back now at Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental, and that song has rendered me unable to remember what the phone number is for this show, the Hot Take Hotline. 401-206-0MLS. See, I got it.
There you go.
But I did hear about the song that he butchered. And I also heard Sam Seichel was in this very room and I missed it, which, you know how I feel about the bird dog. To miss that.
Sam is a good podcaster.
He is.
He's a good podcaster and he's a good reporter. But I had to sit next to him during the whole All-Star game. Sam just wears you down, man.
He does.
He just wears you down.
I think you two are a little bit similar in that way.
Wow.
Doyle came out of that game and said some things about Sam, and I was like, no, I think you're talking about Doyle.
Right. His is a little bit more intense and like energetic. Yours is a little bit more like, his is like cuts your will to like.
Well, that's my thing. His is less depressing than Doyle's. Right. Doyle's is more soul-sucking.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
He's like uppers.
I thought it was an optimistic person.
You're down.
You said that?
Uppers and downers.
You said that at All-Star, and I was like, what is happening?
I miss Sam.
Doyle can't afford a mirror big enough to see his true self.
Wow.
Should we talk about the U.S. national team?
Doyle, soul searching.
You're about to shred hope for the U.S. national team, coaching, everything in the next 10 minutes.
That's not how I am.
Let's do it. Brazil, Mexico coming up. Dave Sarakin called in 25 players for this camp. Very young average age here. You're looking at like 23, which is good. Friday is the Brazil game. That's at MetLife, FS1, Unimas, UDN, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Matt and I are going to be right here at the MLSsoccer.com studios giving you the pregame, postgame, writing some columns, giving you our thoughts.
Are we
going to
drink caipirinhas?
Oh. You know, I haven't had a ton of caipirinhas since 14.
Really?
But I'm down to do that.
You had a ton of caipirinhas in 14.
I had a mini, mini, mini caipirinhas in 2014. And
got the accent. Too.
Yeah, he studied abroad in Brazil.
We're on Weeby's
stuff
now. Sorry,
Brazil.
Oh, I miss this. So, look, 25 players, young team. No Christian Pulisic, which we'll get to in just a second, because some people are getting a little angsty about that.
Because he lacks heart.
No reason at all. What do we think of this roster? Doyle, you wrote the old column on MLSsoccer.com, so I assume that your thoughts are a little more synthesized.
I like to see – so the thing that I care about most for the start of this cycle, and even though we don't have a head coach
– is that what we're calling it? Are we calling this the start of the cycle?
Yeah. Gotta be. Friendly is
the day they lost to Trinidad and Tobago was the start of the next cycle.
Yeah, but now it's like – it's really – there's no more being like, well, caveat, asterisk, blah, blah, blah. Like, this is the start of the cycle, except for the caveat and the asterisk that we don't have a new head coach, right, which is what I actually care about the most. But of this group, what I care about the most is I want to see John Brooks and Matt Miazga together in central defense. Like, it somehow went underappreciated, even though I wrote 7,000 articles about it at the time, that Jurgen Klinsmann did not believe in – building partnerships for his team. And so we never saw...
That would have been a good ad lib. You could just... Jurgen Klinsmann did not believe in blank. Right. And you probably could have had...
You know what? Actually, Weezy. That's a great idea. Yeah. We should make an ad lib for MLS and for the national team in this cycle. I'm going to write that down right now. It's the only way I remember things.
This is why Weeby's an achiever. He always takes notes. But like,
yeah, that'll be in the trash when the show's over.
If you remember the loss against Honduras, that was the first time Olmer Gonzalez and Matt Beasler had ever played together. in this at center back.
I think it was Omar Gonzalez's debut.
No, I thought he had played before.
One January camp friendly?
Something like that. But, like, this was, like, he just threw them in there. Cold, and, like, he hadn't told them in practice that they were going to play together, that they were starting until, like, the day of the game. Like, and, like, that just continued. Like, John Brooks and Jeff Cameron, and I know they both had their struggles throughout qualifying, really. But they really should have been the A1 choice at center back through the entire 2018 cycle. And we got to, like, the start of the hexagonal, and they had never played together as center backs together. And that's insane to me. And it undermined anything he was trying to, and I'm going to use air quotes here, build. It undermined any of that. And so for me, I'm hoping to see, and I'm happy to see, some sanity in terms of just building from the foundation. And to me, that means getting your two best center backs in the pool on the field together, working together, get them as many reps together as is possible.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. Like, other things that I'm looking for, is that what we're talking about? One is I'm going to the game.
Can I call him? Can I respond to Matt first?
Oh, yes, you'd like
what I respond? I'm just fascinated.
I didn't know he was filing a response.
Yeah. I'm fascinated that you're that confident that, and I'll use from this example, Matt Miazga is going to be our best center back for the next 3 years. I mean, why is that top of your list to build these partnerships? And listen, I value the heck out of partnerships, but this early in the cycle, It feels like there's three or four things more important.
I want to see it started now. If it doesn't happen for the long term, at least we'll have tried it and seen that it failed before qualifying actually starts.
What matters more for that partnership? How they play against Brazil or how they play for their club the 2 months prior to whatever game is next?
They all matter. And it's not you can't frame it as an either or.
You don't think B is much more important than A? That whatever.
I don't think much more important.
You don't think Miazga's club form? What if he's not playing? If he's not playing in France, then no matter how well he plays against Brazil, he's not going to start the next friendly.
That's fine. I think Matt Miazga is a good enough player, and he's shown to be smart enough and have a good enough agent where that he's not going to get into a situation where he's not playing. Like, he's gone from Vitesse, and he won his way into that starting lineup, and he won his way into a trophy and wearing the captain's armband, and now he's gone up a level and is playing at a higher level, and he's starting for Nantes.
I dig the idea of partnerships. This just seems like not the top priority in this game, just because form and injuries matter so much for national team, and we have no idea what the partnerships are going to be any given month.
Well, we don't, but why not run out the one
for
that
sure.
You would
no,
prefer?
It matters a little bit.
I'm confused.
Doyle in saying this is, one, saying center-back partnership's important, two, he's then picking the two youngest, most expensive, best players in the pool. Like, he's taking the lowest gamble you can take, which is still a gamble, because we're talking about soccer players and young players, and we're talking about their careers and injuries, you have no idea. But if you're looking at it on its face, the two guys who have been bought for 20 and whatever million dollars and are young and will be around at that age, those are the two that you try in that
right.
spot.
And don't worry, that's a positive. Building the relationships is a positive. I just wouldn't have put it the most important thing we're to accomplish in these 2 weeks.
What's the most important thing?
I was going to do that, but I was going to let you come back.
No. I don't
sorry,
want to.
I just want to hear Bobby. Sorry. I would say, one is just getting these guys a hard game, or two hard games. Brazil and Mexico are good teams against good players. I think in a new setting, on an international stage, it's huge to get all of the young players we have coming in just to get that little nugget in their brain so that they can take it for the future. And two is...
But what was Portugal and France?
Right? Same. No, I agree. It's all part of the same. It's the more we can give these guys a base foundation for this is what you expect in international football. This is what it takes to play the best players in the world. Once we can plant that in their brain, then we can start to do the things that Doyle's talking about. So for me, it's much bigger to give these guys the experience. And then in a month, once we do our closer to a game, we can work on that relationship.
But I'm confused here, and forgive me because I'm coming in pretty dry. I have not really looked at this hard, thought about it much, why you couldn't do both. Like, to me, it's a given when you schedule these games. It's about the test, but
right.
you should be taking that test like with your best possible like preparation.
Yeah, and best bet, best like everything
who,
is a game.
There is a
best bet is that Matt Miazga and John Brooks are going to be the best central defenders in the pool for the duration
I'm not saying that playing these guys together isn't very important, but I'm saying there's at least a 50% chance that whatever our game that matters down the road, what's our next game of consequence?
The Gold Cup. 2019. Yeah,
the Gold Cup. That in 2019, that Matt Biazga and John Anthony Brooks are not our two best center backs. At which point, it will have been much more important that whoever is in this or does play in these games has the experience of these games than the partnership, which probably won't be a partnership a year from now. But if you were to make a bet...
I think 50% is a bet that I'll take every time.
Oh, no, no, no.
50% is that's a pretty good percentage chance that those guys are your starters.
If you were to make a bet right now on Matt Miazga and John Anthony Brooks being the starting center back tandem in 2019, you would take the no.
Yeah.
You would assume
take the field.
You would take the field.
Of course.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Okay.
In taking that into account, it's more important that these guys...
But this is mitigated by the fact that the other central defenders who are really outstanding right now in the pool are already
a
team.
They're good. They're not outstanding.
The outstanding guys relative to the pool are Aaron Long and Tim Parker.
Yeah.
Okay. Cameron Carter-Vickers is here. He has not played this year. Eric Palmer Brown, everybody's got high hopes for them. He cannot break into he has not broken into the lineup yet for NAC Nakbreda in Holland. Justin Glad is not ready yet. Austin Trusty is not ready yet. Mark McKenzie, who I'm very high on, is not ready yet. So Long and Parker already have that partnership. They already have that. Now, I'm not saying give every single minute to Miazga and Brooks. What I'm saying is give them minutes now so that when we go to Honduras in a couple years, you're not putting your two freaking best central defenders on the field for the first time in a place where we never win, in a game where we have to win.
I totally agree with that. I'm just saying it's not the number one. The number one priority is building a culture. Can we all agree on that? It's
but
rebuilding
how
the
do
culture.
You start,
Doyle needs a Fiji water
you,
right
yeah,
now.
He has
I think
to.
We're agreed. To calm,
are they a sponsor?
To calm himself.
But wait, I had something there, and then I just started thinking about water.
The most important thing is building a culture.
But sure, you don't have a head coach right now. So I get
but within the players, building a good atmosphere.
How about a culture of you play your best players together and give them reps? That's what I'm talking about, Bobby.
Yeah, of course. I think we all agree on that.
Okay.
But
I was going to move on to my new thing.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
I want to see where they play Tim Weah because he's played at center forward for
PSG.
They
listed him as a midfielder.
The center forward. The forward pool, I guess you could say, is light. I mean.
I don't think so anymore.
No, I'm not saying about the U.S. I'm saying in this camp. So
Novakovic,
they brought in three guys.
Novakovic, Bobby Wood, and Jesse Zardes.
Wait a minute. I don't think you can call this light.
Really? Bobby Wood doesn't really play.
He played 45 minutes this weekend. He's a Bundesliga forward. And now granted.
Oh, okay. Hold on. We're calling. And Bobby Wood, if you listen to this show over any period of time, we love Bobby Wood. Bobby Wood's a great guy. I get you can call him a Bundesliga forward. But that's a cop-out to me to his performances with Hamburg and 45 minutes. That's not getting me going. You know what I mean?
Hanover went out and got him for a reason, and he was really useful in the second half of this game. He's going to get 1,000, 1,500 minutes somewhere like that in the Bundesliga this year. Now, maybe he's a Bundesliga forward in the way that Josie was an EPL forward. Just not good enough for that level or not the right fit for that level. He's still a pretty good player.
He would
start for every other CONCACAF team other than Mexico. So I'm okay with Bobby Wood. Andrija Novaković, I don't particularly rate him. I think his feet are a little too slow, and I think his runs are a little too passive. But I'm happy to be wrong. And so far, he has 2 goals in 3 games in the Eredivisie.
Neither
should also have an assist. That's pretty good.
But neither of the two guys you just named are starting for PSG or 18 years old or scoring in Liga.
No, that's fine.
So his resume as a center forward right now is as good or better than everyone else.
Tim Weah is not starting. He didn't even make the 18 for PSG. Tim Weah is probably not going to get minutes for PSG.
No, but he started the first 2 games of the year.
Yeah.
He started in the cup.
And now that Cavani is healthy, now that Mbappe is fit, he's not going to play again until December, by which time PSG will have already won that league. But
those are okay guys to sit behind.
My argument is Tim Weah has more potential as a center forward than anybody else in this camp. What I'm arguing with is you saying it's a little light on center forward right now. Jossie Zardes, say what you want about Jossie, but if you point that first touch of his towards goal, the ball goes in the net. And that's what we're seeing in Columbus. So I think saying that it's a little light, and by the way, Dom Dwyer has been very good for a very bad team in MLS this year, and he was very good last year in the Gold Cup, and he's only 27 years old. He could be here as well. So I'm not as confused or as down on the center forward pool as you seem to be.
Doyle's having a good day. He is having a good day, man. I don't know how I can compete with his energy right now.
I appreciate your optimism, but if you look at the other parts of this team, the center forward, I mean, dude, we're trying to advance American soccer, and you're trying to tell me Jossie Zardes and Dom Dwyer are going to put us into the upper echelon. Listen, I don't mean that. It comes off as stupid.
I'm talking about upper echelon, man. I'm talking about beating freaking Trinidad and Tobago.
So we're regressing.
When you have
okay,
to
so
it.
We're regressing. So we're going to say American soccer needs to regress
no,
to grow.
No, this is just, why are you making it so dumb and black and white?
No, I'm not. I'm just trying to say that if you look at this player pool, we should acknowledge that that center striker option is not good enough, and it's not where
Wait
we want
minute.
It to be.
Jose Altidore, if he's healthy and playing like this, is very good. Andrei Novakovic has 2 goals in 3 games in the Eredivisie, which is a good place to start your career off as a full-time professional center forward. Bobby Wood, again, is a Bundesliga player. He's not going to win the Golden Boot, but we've seen him score big goals for club and for country.
And by the way, his best attribute might not be goal scoring.
Right. Tim Weah has played minutes for PSG and will be playing more. Josh Sargent has been tearing it up for Werder Bremen too, and he's going to be in that first team sooner rather than later. That's not the problem. The problem we had last cycle was that we led the entire hexagonal in scoring. We scored more goals than any other team in the hexagonal. We had a terrible defense, and we had a brainless midfield. Bruce Arena put a team out there that played 1-4 in central midfield, and we lost to freaking Trinidad and Tobago because of that. I don't think forward's the problem. I think the problem's in midfield.
You just named a bunch of dudes that aren't even on this. Yeah, we agree with you that if you look at Josh Sargent and Josie, but ultimately he was talking about this roster.
And I already smacked that down. The problem with this roster is...
I appreciate that you're high on them. I'm not going to try and take away your optimism.
Yeah, can I ask who the people are going to point... Jesse's artist toward the goal with, like, balls on his foot from this midfielder.
Weston McKennie?
I mean, maybe DeAndre Yedlin, like, overlapping a little bit. Weston McKennie's playing back line right now for Schalke, is he not?
Yeah, he played some at right back and then some at central midfield. He has been bad, and Schalke has been bad through 2 games. They've been unwatchably bad. I still think he's a spectacular player and is going to be one of the guys that this is built around. So there is true playmaker.
I'm just looking at this and wondering how you point Jesse's artist in the direction of the goal against Brazil and Mexico. Like, because this is not Trinidad and Tobago. This is not Honduras.
So I don't think it happens, and that is exactly my point. The problem here is not with the forward pool. The problem is the midfield is still very much under construction. We're not sure if Tyler Adams is a defensive midfielder, but we're going to get a look. We're not sure if Will Trapp can hack it at the international level.
What does that mean, we're not sure that Tyler at the international level?
Yeah.
So but he is an MLS. Right back,
I mean, he has been. I mean, Tyler Adams has been the best D-mid in MLS this year.
Okay, so I just want to make
Diego
sure.
Chara. Yeah.
I just want to make sure we were
Will Trapp has been excellent. We don't know if he can do it against Brazil, against Mexico. Sebastian Legette, I love him. He's a part-time starter for the LA Galaxy right now, and it's not clear that he's ever going to be the player he was before that broken ankle against Honduras. These are all big questions, and it's why I think Tim Weah is probably listed here as a winger rather than as a forward, because the idea is you can play, like, you play two wingers in this situation. You play one guy who gets a lot of the ball, which would probably be Legette, play him inverted, and you play one guy who plays primarily off the ball, which would probably be Weah on the right side, and you play him, he wouldn't be inverted.
Is Legette the guy that you would want to see in that spot right now?
Of this group, yeah. I mean, it's light. It's light on playmaking
ability. Your other options are Areola, probably. Julian Green, maybe, but he's more of that off-the-ball guy, I would think. And maybe like a roll
Julian
dog.
Green's more of an off-the-field guy.
Yeah, Julian Green.
Hey, man, he's sticking around. He's sticking around.
He has 5 goals in 4,000 minutes at the 2 Bundesliga level.
We should all be so lucky.
Yeah, right? I mean, to be fair, he always plays better for the national team than he does for
because he plays!
4,000 minutes is playing, David.
Yes.
The thing I want to see from this is I would actually like to see Trapp deep with Adams and McKennie in front of him. Just keep Trapp in that position where he just wins second balls, sprays, and then they go. Because we're not going to have more than 35% of the ball against either of these teams.
We're both concerned about Trapp's defensive ability. His ability to, A, win second balls, and B, move laterally to cut out lanes. We like a ton of Trapp's game, but that's the big question mark. Can he do that on the defensive side of the ball to play at this level?
Yeah, I agree.
Should we talk about Kellen Acosta?
Sure.
I mean, because he was great for three or four weeks.
He can be your number 10.
Stop, Anthony Hudson.
No,
stop.
I'm willing to say this, dude. Doyle and I disagreed over text message. We talk about our team moving forward. We talk about these options. What are most of these dudes? They're energetic. They're fast. Almost all of them came up through schemes where they pressed and counter-pressed. So there was once upon a time when you weren't the better team. You would sit deep. You would win the ball. You would go on a counter. I think the world's changed, and now you play on the front foot. You play guys that can cover ground. If you don't have a playmaker, you make your playmaker the press, and I would put Tyler Adams and Kellen Acosta and Paul Ariola farther up the field and say, I don't need you to do stepovers. I don't need you to play through balls. I need you to close down the ball. I need you to go to goal as fast as possible.
Brazil, September 7th. That's Friday. 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it. FS1, Unimas, and Univision Deportes. And then September 11th on the Tuesday, U.S. national team hosting Mexico on ESPN at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We did not mention the coaching search. We did not mention Christian Pulisic. Should we talk about Pulisic? I kind of say no. Anybody who's wringing their hands about his absence here, get over yourselves or a couple friendlies.
Who's ringing
He's the best player on the team. Don't question his... To me, I don't question his like dedication to this team at all.
We could say the most important thing for all of these players moving forward is not the result when, or Friday or Tuesday. It is being in your club's first team mm-hmm. for whenever the next game is.
100%. The only thing that matters for these guys is being in a good position to play a lot of minutes at their club team. Mm-hmm. And whatever that is, whether it's a health situation or just a familiarity situation or not even wanting to get a guy jet lagged, like that is what matters the most.
Which is why we're not seeing guys like Kenny Seif here. Kenny Seif has not even been able to break into the 18.
Well, by the way, if you can't do that, you shouldn't be with the national team. There has to be some sort of like there's some merit based.
Sebastian Legette doesn't start for the
Galaxy. Can I actually point this out? Yeah, I always thought this to be weird.
Former associate head coach in the national team.
I always thought the idea of form to be weird because if you play for Bayern Munich and you're not in the 18, aren't you still a better player than the guy that's not like that is getting regular minutes for somebody else? Anyway, that's like a little bit my tangent. But I always thought this idea of going off form and playing time is a little bit weird.
Interesting aside there. Juan Carlos Osorio, as we said, and Doyle celebrated, will not be the head coach of the U.S. national team. He will be the head coach of Paraguay. Ernie Stewart apparently hasn't interviewed anybody yet.
Can we talk about Jose Pekerman real quick, though? Jose Pekerman waited until 3 hours after JCO was announced as the head of Paraguay to announce that he's stepping down as head coach of Colombia. And Colombia was JCO's dream job. I think that Pekerman was probably pretty ticked off about all the supposed leaks from Osorio's camp about how he was being considered for Colombia and how he was basically campaigning for that job while Pekerman still had it.
Is it true that David Moyes is up for the Colombia job?
He's interested.
I was going to make an announcement
Sam Allardyce.
That I was available for any and all open jobs. If any MLS coach takes the international team job, I could fill in. Just let me know. I want to have a camp. Someday I hope I have a camp. So, like, things come out about me, and it's like, well, who said that? It's like, oh, Weeby's camp is leaking these rumors. All of you are looking at me with faces that say, you will not be a part of my camp. I'm leaving you behind. What's going to happen with the head coach? If he hasn't interviewed anybody, that says to me, probably, like you tweeted, Matt, this that he's waiting because that candidate is probably in Major League Soccer.
You think that Ernie Stewart, at his position, can't interview a current MLS coach for the U.S. national team job at the end of the season?
I think there's a difference between like an official interview.
A formal one and something like, yeah. I mean, he knows all these dudes. He can give you a call. He should have
What does interview mean nowadays anyway? You know, if he happens to call
Spoken like someone who's never had a real job.
I didn't interview for this
But
job.
How many people even with their real jobs don't like have a phone conversation or get their name put forward by, like, when
I
Ernie
Stewart. Interview here.
Ernie
They brought me in.
Oh, I remember that.
Interview.
Yeah, in the,
you weren't
in the
there.
Snack room. No,
oh, you were
I
there?
Yeah, I was there. I think Furshaw just handled that one.
Yeah. I don't know. Simon was like rocking on the edge of his seat next to me.
Yeah.
I was so scared of him. And I left, and my mom goes, how was the crazier one of the two? Because I had told her what they were like, and I was like, he's actually really nice. But definitely a little
definitely
nice.
Crazy.
Yeah. So you put out a tweet, Doyle, with a poll here that saying, who do you think the new manager will be, and asked for a preference, and you had Berhalter, Tata Martino, Peter Vermes, and Guillermo Barros-Schelotto on this. And Greg Berhalter, 3G, got 41% of your vote. By the way, you had 2,300 votes.
Yeah.
Like better voter turnout than a lot of this country.
I got juice.
Tata Martino, 33%, Peter Vermes, 17%, GBS, 9%. Does that line up with our preferences here, our thoughts, our feelings of how it will roll out?
We even talked about Peter Vermes a ton, and I hope that doesn't mean we don't think he'd be very good. I just think we all thought he would stay at SKC because of what he built. Like, is it weird to say that maybe Peter Vermes actually wouldn't want the national team job?
Yes.
I know it.
We already stood on this hill and we talked about this. But you, who have played and played for a youth national team, which isn't even the full national team, knows for most of this country's soccer-like world, the national team is this duty and it's this top thing to change the sport in this country. Peter Vermees played for a team where he would sleep in a room with four other guys in a dorm for 10 years. You don't think he's going to coach the national team?
Wait, what did I say? I forget.
You said that you didn't think he would take it. You thought there was a chance he wouldn't want to take it. And me and Doyle said it's like the ultimate calling for this.
I don't know why.
Then why have you been saying Greg Berhalter's name more than Peter Vermees' name?
Because he's been rumored more and because, I mean,
his brother
works for USSF.
No, we all don't think that has anything to do with it. That is a conspiracy theory that people will bring out, but
also because his club situation is a little bit more
rocky.
That's
the point. That's the point.
But if you look at Peter Vermees, and I don't know why the hell I said that whenever I said that, because maybe my brain has completely shifted in the time since then, but like you look at the project that he was able to bring to Kansas City. If you're Peter Vermees, you say part of the conditions of this job for me are that I stay in Kansas City and we train at the best facility in the nation. If you're Peter Vermees, you know you can go back to Kansas City at any time and have the job that you want. Because, by the way, Kerry Zavagnin, I love him. I think if he was to elevate and be that head coach, he'd do a great job. He would continue that culture we were talking about is so important. But there would still be a spot for Peter Vermees because right now he runs everything. He is the soccer czar. He could slot right back in above, and maybe he's not on the sideline, but he could have the influence that he needs and stay involved in U.S. soccer. And now I'm like, what was I thinking? Why did I say that? But Peter Vermees would bring that cultural change that you were talking about, Bobby. Like, he would bring that.
Also, this is it. This is the job.
Yeah.
It isn't even coaching in La Liga. Like, this is it. For a guy who played in the 1990 World Cup, where no one thought they belonged, to coach the national team in 2022, to save the national team, to build it again, whatever it is he would be doing, this is the dream. And so there's no way a guy like Peter Vermees is turning it down. I don't know that Tata would take it.
I don't know that
we're having this. I think he came here for something new and different, and Atlanta is that. And I don't think he came here just to live in the U.S. and then take the other job.
That said, he's in his second year with Atlanta. He never stays anywhere more than 2.5 years. And if you look at, with all due respect to Vermees and Berhalter, and I threw Scalotto in as well because he has ties here, he has connections here. His contract with Boca Juniors runs out at the end of December, so he is free on the same timeline as well. But if you look at those guys,
it's a good
resume,
timeline for MLS teams as well.
Yeah, hint, hint. If you look at their resumes and you look at Tata Martino's resume, it's no contest. Tata Martino would be the ideal candidate given what he did with Paraguay, which is a mid-tier, grinded-out team, similar to the U.S., given what he did with Argentina, which is obviously a much different team, but it shows the level he can get a group to play at, given what he did with Barcelona and given what he's done with Atlanta. He's not a perfect coach. He's not the perfect choice, but he's as close to it as is, honestly, as is conceivable right
we
now.
We want all your mail. 401-206-0MLS. What do you think about these friendlies that are coming up, the roster, Christian Pulisic, the head coaching situation? Something's got to happen at some point. Either this year or early next year. Otherwise, I don't know what's going on there. What's Ernie Stewart doing? I have faith, but we got to wait. Canada, U.S. Virgin Islands, baby. The first game of 2019-2020 CONCACAF Nations League qualifying. They go to U.S. Virgin Islands. In case you don't know how Nation League works, basically there's going to be three tiers. Yeah, I know. I'm with you, Bobby. I had to like really read up on this today.
Me
three
too.
Tiers,
I did it the other day.
A, B, and C. So the top six teams that were in the hex last time around go right into A. Six more teams will join them there. And this is also the Nations League figuring out who qualifies for the Gold Cup. So all these other nations outside of Guatemala, everybody outside of those six in the hex play four qualifying games, two home, two away. The top 10 teams, based on points out of those, will qualify with the six from the hex to the Gold Cup. Either way, this all seeds teams into A, B, and C, and then you've got competitive games going from there. You're trying to win your division. There is promotion relegation between each division. It's very interesting, and you should go read about it. Canada have a young team, have a team that Herdman's very excited about. All his quotes are very glowing, as they should be at this point in the process, and with the young talent that they have involved. They should win, you would think, games against U.S. Virgin Islands, Dominica, St. Kitts and Nevis, and French Guiana. They should be in the Gold Cup. If they're not in the Gold Cup, that is
a failure.
Epic. Yeah. Epic failure on the part of
then David Moyes Canadian takes
soccer.
Over the team.
Hey.
That's going to be reported in, like, the Star.
For sure it
now.
Is, yeah. So what do we think? We have any thoughts on this cycle for Canada? Because as
they
we
should,
said,
they should try to win. They should try to win every game 6-4. I mean, look, the Kyle Larin, Lucas Cavallini, who's been very good, I think, for Puebla so far this year. 18-year-old kid Jonathan David, who's tearing it up for Ghent. Those are their forwards. They have Jonathan Osorio in midfield. They still have Junior Ouellette, who's only 28 years old. Scott Arfield, who's played okay for them in the past. He's 29 years old. They have these guys who are in their prime, and that's not even counting Alfonso Davies, who was on this roster as well, and Balu Janiv's Tabla. Remember him, who was so good for Montreal? Now, he's not on this roster, but he's...
He hasn't chosen Canada yet.
He hasn't chosen Canada yet, but if you come out and you play fun soccer and you win a lot of games, maybe he does choose Canada. The problem is the defense leaves a lot to be desired. Obviously, Sam Piette is going to be the defensive midfielder, and he's been good.
And Russell Tybert has been good the last few weeks
for
Vancouver.
And I'm really high on Liam Fraser, who's the defensive midfielder, mm-hmm. young defensive midfielder for Toronto.
I just want to say I'm also high on Liam Fraser, but I get worried when he says that because then I get flashbacks of Jay Chapman hitting crosses 40 yards
Ooh.
High, and then I feel like Ooh. Now me and Doyle are going down that road again. But continue.
Defensively, there's a lot to be desired. They need some young players to step up. In the meantime, it'll probably be Dejan Jakovic, Daniil Henry, and Mandrakar James, who has been decent for them in the past. And he's, I guess, him and Daniil Henry are the hope for the future. But none of them have, neither has shown that future is going to be all that bright.
We're going to go to the break. We'll have coverage of all these, of course, on Thursday, Friday, and next week.
I just want to throw in for hope there, Liam Miller, right? Playing for Liverpool's U23s.
Yeah.
Gerrard's a huge fan of him.
There's a lot of guys like that
and
for
they
Canada
have,
right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, they have like a goalkeeper for Juventus, the Primavera.
Yeah,
you know, like
young guys in big teams or in middle-sized teams, you're like, will they make it, will they not make it?
Yeah, but
it?
This guy is – also, these guys aren't duels, so like they lost – who is there's a defender for in Serie A that they lost
right.
as a duel that isn't playing for Canada. Liam Miller's not. So he's 100% locked in.
Nice.
Whether he's good or not, it doesn't matter because he's going to be Canadian.
Question before we go to break. Do we promote and or relegate anyway from this group as Ben Bear enters? Or do we all want to be involved in the mailbag with Ben Bear? How do you feel?
A 5-person mailbag would be anarchy. I love it.
Okay. Anarchy it is. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com. Or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Cause I gotta have faith. I gotta have faith. Because I got to have faith. I got to have faith, the faith, the faith. Baby!
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Anarchy, Ben Bear is here. Should have made a guarantee about the Sounders, just saying. Could have been a good one.
What kind of guarantee would you have wanted?
They weren't going to make the playoffs, and then you could have taken credit for their run, and then you could have been like Bobby Warshaw is oftentimes in the national conversation, maybe getting quote slates from teams. Seattle Sounders would have blown you up. They'd have been like, Ben Bear proved wrong again. It could have been you.
That's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
Wow.
Why? Wait, why? Why
I just
that?
Want everyone to know Ben's doing this podcast standing. That's why he's got so much juice. Yeah.
So you wanted me to
I'm just
say
to
they were
going to
miss the playoffs so I could be proven wrong? And
it worked really well for you the first time.
Well, for me?
Yeah.
How did
that
work well for me?
Because that was your
everybody,
it was your
people,
brand.
Yeah, people hit us up all the time. Like,
we literally
Bear.
Got a
Before that,
thing.
I searched through the email, not one Ben Bear mention at all, ever. I didn't actually search through the email, but I'm guessing that's probably the case.
None of this is true.
See, now we got y'all riled up and we're ready to go. Anarchy time. Look, one thing I do want to throw out there, if any of our creative listeners have something in their brains that relates to Extra Time Radio Awards, we're going to do an award show at the end of the year. I'm thinking about renting tuxedos for all of you, but it may just be tux t-shirts. We are going to, I hope, announce real awards, but mostly just come up with our own silly awards about the MLS season and or serious. So if you have award categories, we want them. And if you have a name for an award given by Extra Time Radio, I don't know what it would be, a bird dog-shaped trophy.
That's good.
A bear doing research.
What about a Canadian tuxedo? Or is that not like a thing? Do Canadians frown upon the use of the word?
Yeah, that might be insensitive, inappropriative.
You started so well.
Inappropriate tip.
That's not a word.
And appropriate tip.
I thought that was an invented word. Well, let us know. 401-206-0-MLS. Get us started.
Last show, we talked about our best U.S. 11 all time. And I think we actually ended up pretty close to what other people sent in. So I'm going to read one here. Starting lineup, Friedel and goal. Beasley on the left. Pope, Balboa, and Chirondolo. He wrote Bradley, Reyna, and Bradley, which I do not quite understand. And then Donovan, Altidore, and Dempsey up top. And he wrote maiden lineup 4-3-3.
He might have meant O'Brien.
Maybe, but then he said Jermaine Jones would be the guy who starts with this group because you don't have a true defensive midfielder in there, although
you
do
still
have Michael
don't.
Bradley.
And you can nice. Is that who? Is that Jurgen in Southern California that wrote that? Or
it says Dolo gets the nod over Yedlin right now, the 23 that would get to a World Cup, and then he added onto his bench a little bit. But I wanted to give you guys some space here to add your names.
I mean, that was actually pretty good if it's O'Brien in central midfield. I think Bradley, Reyna, and O'Brien would have worked together pretty well as a central midfield. The problem is Bradley really is a defensive midfielder, but he almost never got to play that role for the U.S., so do you list him as a defensive midfielder? Beasley was very good left back, but he played most of his caps as a left winger. Yeah, you know, so O'Brien is the best left back who has ever played for the U.S., except he never played as a left back for the U.S., so it's tough to do this.
To me, when I look at this question, and I don't have any answers right now.
Mine
is more like, I know you're going theoretical there. It's not about where they played the most for the U.S., it's about building, to me, the more fun way to do it is building the best 11, and part of that is saying, these guys didn't get to play their best positions. I'm going to play them there, and we're going to be better for it.
My three questions for you, Matt, because you're old, are where did Balboa, Harkes, and Eric Winalda rank in this compared to players? Like, how was Winalda in Bundesliga compared to what we see from Josie or Saul from McBride? Like, how was Marcelo Balboa compared to John Anthony Brooks?
I think of those three, only Balboa really has an argument to be best 11. And while his career was longer than Lawless's, peak Alexi might still be the best center back.
When he was starting in Serie A.
Yeah, from 93 in Serie A's prime. 96. Yeah, Alexi was dominant. And he could pass better than people want to give him credit for. But like that goes back to the discussion of what this really is. Like, do you take one guy's 3-year peak over?
Well, that's what we were trying to talk about. A moment in time or their careers.
Yeah, like Tony Sanna in 2002 was better than Chirondolo ever was. Yep. But Chirondolo did it for 13 straight years.
Yeah. So we ended with moment in time.
Okay.
But we gave, like, if two guys were tied, we
kind of the edge.
Shaded towards Chirondolo, right. I think, in the end. So.
But as for Winalda and Harkes, like, Harkes was Jermaine Jones 1.0. He was an untethered central midfielder. He would go anywhere and try to make any play, and for certain teams that was really, really valuable. For other teams, it ended up breaking their shape and making them hard to play with. Winalda would have been a great second forward playing off of Joe. Like, if you could have put Prime Winalda in that Bob Bradley era U.S. national team, he would have scored 1,000 goals. Mm. But with other teams, you know, and especially once he got hurt and lost a step, he was a passenger. That's tough.
Good input from Peter Putrangelo, who did a good job of giving me his name exactly how he pronounces it.
Nice.
So you got that one
well
right.
Done. He listens to the show, obviously. Nice.
Just watched the Clint Dempsey tribute video that the Sounders put out. Props to Dempsey, but man, can we get Frankie Haydock on Extra Time for MLS Story Time?
We've
already
can.
Attempted to do that.
We can, and we tried.
Yeah.
He's a hard guy. Anybody in the room got a Frankie Haydock story?
He's a hard guy to peg down.
Not that we're going
to
tell.
I have a Frankie Haydock story.
You want to do it?
Sure.
I trained when I was in college. I was a freshman, just finished my freshman year in college.
This is 07?
Yeah, they won the championship in 07. I went to train with the crew, and it was great. You know, Guillermo Bosco.
No, I'm sorry. You were a freshman?
I was a freshman at Stanford. Went to train with Columbus.
Okay.
The championship year. I was there for 2 weeks.
The championship year was 2008 for Columbus.
Whatever that was. Okay, that would make sense. I was a freshman.
You don't remember what year you were a freshman in college?
No.
The dream was not yet reality.
So anyway, we go to train there, and there's one day we're playing like 8v8, and the reserves then got a reserve game, so it was myself and two other college kids, one of which was Ziggy's son. who was at UC Irvine at the time, and it was maybe five reserves against the eight starters. And I was number 10 at this point. I had just won, I like to say this whenever possible, if you guys haven't noticed, I had just won Pac-10 Freshman of the Year as number 10. I had just been named Top Drawers College Freshman of the Year as number 10. So I could ball at this point. The good old days, guys. The good old days. And I dropped three on Frankie Paduk on his side. The reserves and myself go up 3-0. The ball comes into me. My back's to goal. Frankie Paduk two-footed me at the knees. Scissored me. Like, tried to end my life. I'm on the ground, and I'm like, thank you, Mr. Haydock. May I have another? Because that's what 18-year-olds say to Frankie Haydock. Here comes Stefani Migliorangi and pushes Haydock and stands up for me. The best part of this whole entire thing, Frankie Haydock two-footed Stefani Migliorangi. Jump, drop kicked him. Like, Stefani punched him in the chest, and Frankie, like, literally jumps up and sidekicks Stefani in the side. Frankie Haydock got kicked out of practice by Ziggy at the time. The next day, Frankie comes up and apologizes to me. He's like, sorry, man. Like, I lost it. We were losing. And I was literally like, you know what, Frankie? Thank you, dude. Thank you. I appreciate you doing that.
And that's how you become a guy who wins 120 caps when you're not all that skillful, is you care about winning that much. Yeah. Maybe a little too much. Bobby lost all his speed in that moment.
Yeah, right. No, that was.
I have a question. So you did that in 2008.
Yeah.
What pick? You scored three goals on Frankie Haydock.
Yeah.
What pick did Columbus have when you were drafted?
And
what pick did Seattle have?
Seattle.
Ziggy saw you.
Ziggy said that they would have taken me in the first round. They were like, or the second round. They were like fourth pick that year.
Got it.
And Columbus took, you know who Columbus took that year?
2011?
Yeah.
Is it Miram?
No, Rich Balchin.
Oh, all right.
Oh, they took, you know what? They actually took Miram first with like the ninth pick, then they Rick Balkan, like, yeah, two picks
Balkan
later.
Was actually good for a while,
Indiana.
And then he had a couple of injuries that destroyed all his lateral movement.
And if you guys want to talk about deep cut picks in the 2011 MLS Super Draft, this is your segment. Bobby's into it.
I'm into it.
Can we take a minute to mourn the fact that Dempsey was one goal away from being the all-time leading scorer for both Seattle and the USMNT?
I'm going to mourn the USMNT one more.
Except for the fact...
His last touch of the ball for U.S. national team was the shot that hit the post at Kuva.
Yeah, that's true. Also, for Seattle, it's this shot from midfield
with
Tarbell out that hits the post as well.
The thing is, we can mourn that, and I've heard some of these and seen some of these conversations, but Clint Dempsey gives zero Fs about that.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. I don't think he does.
If he did, then he wouldn't have
maybe
just retired.
The U.S., but I really just don't feel like he's a guy who's out here with measuring sticks. I don't know. Maybe
he's,
that's just
he's
me.
A guy out here with fishing poles. Go catch some bass.
There you go.
By the way, when he retired last week, there was a talk on Twitter and in certain columns about who had the most sauce in U.S. national team history, men's or women's. And I think Tobin Heath definitely deserves a shout. She deserves to be up there. Mary Frances Monroe. How is nobody mentioning Clint Mathis?
I was just going to say, because I was thinking
nobody had more sauce than Clint freaking Mathis.
Because I think the sauce part of it, and I need to go back and read your column, Bobby. Like I said, complete detox. Sauce to me is a multitude of things. It's almost all on the field, but to have it on the field, you almost have to have it off the field in some ways.
Yeah.
And I just think about like everything that Clint Mathis was, and he was kind of this like ghost that I had to go research when I first really, really dug into U.S. soccer and was like, oh, I love this. This is the best thing ever. I had to go back to it, and I was just kind of like, wait, nobody talks about this dude?
Yeah.
Like, nobody talks about
all of the Metro Stars players tell stories of when he got back from the 2002 World Cup. He had, like, a bunch of juice in New York City, and he would just roll up to a club, and the entire Metro Stars team would follow him in because he was the only one with name recognition, probably in the MLS sphere in New York, and that's when Clint
Mathis
was
on Letterman. He was doing all that stuff. And if you want to talk about, to go back to the previous discussion, a moment in time, best 11 player, from 2000 to 2000, end of 2002, there was nobody better than Clint Mathis. He was awesome. Like, there's a reason that Bayern Munich wanted him, and boy, did Metro Stars blow it by not selling him to Bayern Munich back then.
Let's shift to Canada. Looking at the Canadian men's national roster, I started to wonder, what if Canada played in MLS? Where would they finish? So let's imagine that this Canadian national team was the 12th team playing in the East this season. Where would they finish? I'd like to think they'd make the playoffs. At least, for argument's sake, you assume that guys who cross over, like Jonathan Osorio, would play for both teams in this scenario.
Did Kyle Langer called up? I forgot.
He did.
Yeah. It's not just this roster, though. It's the
Canadian
national team right now.
It's a podcast, so you can't just think silently, Ben.
I was just offered a question. I'm going to say, like, around the playoff line.
Okay.
Like Montreal, like that kind of level right there. I mean, why? You have Davies, Laren. I don't think they have – their defending would give me a lot of issues. Their goalkeeping. And you're relying a lot on the Carolina to score goals, I think.
That's my issue.
Know. You have Cavallini's been good for
Yeah, Cavallini has been good, yeah.
Like, you can go straight up old-fashioned 4-4-2, right, where you have Osorio inverted on the left, and you have Davies inverted on the right, and you have Cavallini and Laren up top, and then you go with Piet and, I guess, Arfield in central midfield.
Because you can't use Atiba because he's retired.
Atiba's retired.
Okay.
And then you have, I guess, De Jong at left back.
Raheem Edwards
and
at left back?
And here's where it kind of falls
Raheem
apart.
Raheem Edwards at left back. Okay, now we're talking. And then you just go.
You still have Michael Petrasso at right back, who hasn't had a great year with Montreal.
Who hasn't been able to break into Montreal, who then went and signed a 35-year-old Bakary Sagna to fill that spot.
True. That's very, very
true. I mean,
true.
The back line. So you go out there and you try to win game 6-4?
Out of the playoffs.
Let's wow. move back.
Out of the playoffs. Come on.
Weeby.
There's no back line.
Okay.
And they don't have like
excuse me, Montreal Impact.
They have better
no back line.
Montreal Impact actually have decent defenders. It just took them half the season to get them on the field.
Weeby's all in on Montreal. I didn't realize that.
I'm not all in.
No. Weeby's 100%
decent defenders.
Sticking with USMNT, it's Mark Machado from Winchester, Virginia. At this moment, Russell Knauss is the best D mid in the pool.
Knauss.
Due to his commitment, strength, and energy, he's an elite ball winner, while technically he's strong too. Additionally, it seems like the other D-mids all have something going against them, like Bradley and obviously Dax and guys like that. McKennie's not a true D-mid. We're still yet to see Will Trapp and Adams at that level.
So you're saying we've seen Russell Knauss at a level that we haven't seen Will Trapp? Is that what he's saying?
He said he's improved a ton over the last year. He struggles a bit off the ball from Trapp. From Adams, while many will disagree, his ceiling is higher at right back / right wing back.
That's a take. Will Trapp was one of the best players in a team that went to MLS Cup like 3 years ago.
And he's been one of the best players for them this year. That said, I will say Knauss is a better ball winner than Will
I think
Trapp. I think you could play them together.
I think he has better. His potential is maybe higher, Knauss. But they have it's like very different skill sets.
Yeah. I think, though, at this point, as good as Knauss has been – and I agree that Adams' ceiling is higher as a right-sided player, as a right wing back or fullback. Adams has also been a better defensive midfielder than Knauss has been this year. And like, I hope that Adams goes somewhere where he ends up being a fullback, because I think he can be literally world class at that spot. But even if he ends up playing,
what do you mean he's going to be Naby Keita?
Are we not? Why are we? He's going to RB Leipzig.
Yeah. He's going to Leipzig.
That's why I was confused when you started that off, because you said something. I was like, yeah, that's true. He is going to do that.
Everyone's basically
Ronan Murphy said, it, like, and Kicker both.
I mean, how many
confirmed.
Different reports?
Knauss has not. He's played 700 minutes this year.
He's really good, though.
I agree.
You got to go back and watch that Atlanta United game.
Oh, my God.
Weekend.
Did you just put your bare feet on the table?
We're relaxing now.
Okay.
I think it's about time to revisit the Rooney signing. We're now 11 games in with 4 goals, 4 assists. Beyond that, many would argue his presence on the field has created space for other teammates to create. Signing Rooney was heavily criticized in the beginning. What do we think? Has this been signing been a flop or a success?
I think ultimately you decide upon it after the playoff race is run. If he keeps playing as he has been, and he hasn't been what Didier Drogba was in 2015.
But Didier Drogba came into a team that wasn't just like at the bottom buried. Like, to
That's
me,
fair.
You cannot judge Wayne Rooney at any point in 2018 with any definitive.
So what I was
going
to compare him to is what Ladero did. Ladero's stats weren't amazing in 2016. Like, he didn't lead the league in assists and, you know, he didn't goals and assists per 90. He just took a team and his presence made everybody on that team 3-4% better. And to me, it looks like that's what Rooney's doing.
I agree. I mean, I wrote this from the start. I think this was always a good signing for them for a lot of reasons. I actually think he's overperforming what I thought he would do on the field.
He gave them a focal point. He gave them a focal point in the same way that Ladero did, and that's allowed guys like Lucho Acosta especially to perform at their best, a level or three above what I thought was capable.
We never saw that from Lucho before.
No.
This is brand new.
This email is from Dawson in Richmond. He then wanted us to play a game over underrated and then go through a few things. Not all of them are great, but one of them is it goes traveling to away games, Andrew Weeby, Turf, and then Tam.
Oh.
So I figured I'd throw that one in there to see if we could play
Tam,
over underrated.
Tam, overrated.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. Overrated because teams don't use it all that well. Oh. Some teams do. There have been some hits.
Good call.
But there's a lot of misses.
Yep.
There's a whole lot of misses that then change the market and change the way teams can construct and change the way that agents ask for money and change what American players and Canadian players get as well. Overrated on
it can also artificially raise players like the way they pay them. So like maybe they're a $400,000 player. But they pay them $600,000. Yeah. So that's what they're
overrated.
Ben's about to tantrum.
We went through this all again on Saturday night. It was
anything that gets Danny Wilson and Tommy Smith into the league.
You don't
can't
have to
be overrated.
Explain to me, Ben. You don't need to explain here.
I'm sorry. There's other people in the room that we went through this with.
This is for Ben here. Kevin from Milwaukee.
I'm so shocked that you guys didn't like roast me right there.
No, you were right. It was your annual correctness.
I just wanted to put you in there.
Oh, okay. Oh, that wasn't actually in there.
No, it was in there.
Oh,
I didn't
write
that. Okay. Kevin from Milwaukee, more stay school, please. A few weeks ago, I sent a text about San Jose's win in Dallas where I cited the Quakes' decent record in Dallas since 2011. I called it unexplainable, similar to D.C. sweeping Atlanta last year. Ben Bear, the guy who hasn't lived up to his King of Takes nickname all season and whose quote-unquote guarantees have become a joke, ripped my take to shreds saying that I hate that stat. San Jose winning in 2011 has nothing to do with winning in 2018. It's a fair point. But as someone who's loved statistics his whole life, the stats don't have to be relevant or meaningful to be fascinating. That's why the stat Sam pointed out that San Jose are 7-0-1 versus Minnesota and Dallas since last year. He gave us an exact timestamp, was so damn interesting. He even cited DC Atlanta last year. Sam understands that we should just sit back and enjoy the weird stuff that happens.
Sam has lived up to his bird dog nickname in spades.
God, weedy.
Stop. Just stop.
Ben has not.
Just because, I think we dropped the King of Takes moniker, did we not?
Who's we?
Well, you did because you just stopped saying
it. Oh, that's true. Well, you weren't living up to it. You weren't living up to it.
Do you have a take that you want to drop now?
No, I just think it was funny. You know, first of all, yes. I think when the original email was like, oh, is this like a meaningful stat? And I was like, no. And he said it wasn't meaningful. He said it was weird. Yeah, weird stats could be good, but that doesn't make it like a meaningful stat. Also, he just completely undercuts the whole spiel by saying that's a fair point when I said what I said. So there you go. But shout out to Milwaukee. That's all I got to say.
Ooh.
Wisco.
I mean, this is regular email here, but.
Yeah.
Last one here, Trevor.
34-3, by the way, in case you guys were wondering.
Oh, yeah, I don't care. The last one here from Trevor. Despite the club's poor season, Dwyer's continued to put up numbers for the Lion with up to $700,000 in performance incentives in the trade from SKC. I have to ask, how many of those have been paid out? The details of this portion of the trade weren't exactly clear. Nonetheless, I still have to believe the trade was worth it despite the poor club showing. Do you agree? Now I have this question for you because we can answer that question.
I'm pretty sure that like those incentives on his – those were extremely attainable things. It was basically like, does Dom Dwyer play? You get that money.
Right.
Now, yeah, the Nabby ones were the ones
the Nabby ones were impossible to reach, basically.
So my question is this, though. If you're Orlando, let's just say they weren't. They were, like, higher thresholds. Let's say it was scoring 16 goals, starting 25 times. Would you, in a season like this, not play your best player so that you didn't have to pay because you weren't going to make the playoffs anyway?
Because Tam grows on trees.
Oh, there you go.
Like, they traded a lot of Tam at the time, but the amount of Tam is like tripled.
Yeah,
in the past year.
Yeah,
that's the most difficult thing about Tam.
This is literally the conversation that we had on Saturday.
The relative value of Tam changes all the time because there's no like reliable trajectory in its value. Like they're basically printing money.
It's like basic inflation.
Yeah.
Tam doesn't matter as much in this as salary cap. Because remember, players, if a player plays 50% of games, 75% of games, hits goals, he might get a $25,000, $50,000, $100,000 bonus. It might be bigger for some guys that then rolls over to the next year. So if you do see a player who's not playing, you're like, I don't get that. Sometimes at this stage in the year, it is because of those bonuses.
So the question becomes then, is Dom Dwyer worth a max salary hit? Well, he's played about a full year's worth of minutes for Orlando City since they got him, about 2,700 minutes. He has 16 goals and 4 assists. To me, that's a max salary center forward.
Yep. I don't disagree with that at all, and now he's in his prime. Look, you have to have something to hinge your hope on.
It's not his fault.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, I'm sure he's going to want to score this weekend, so it should be fun.
Get your money, Dom. 401-206-0MLS. That's a hot take hotline. Extratime at MLSsoccer.com is the email. We're out of here. That's it for Monday. Thank you, Tuesday. Whoa. Yeah. life comes at you fast. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody.
We'll be right back.